So let me go ahead and begin. We'll let people fellowship. I know it's hard to compete with Nacho Sunday. That's tough. It's rough. But one thing I will do, and we'll make this announcement later, is I'm going to put the slides on the website. And I will also put this recording out if it turns out to be useful. And I believe we can do that. So I want to give a little of my background. It's important that you know that I'm not a security expert. Okay, I'm a computer geek and I'm an engineer, and so there's a lot of overlap with, you know, you learn a lot about security when you're so fond of computers over the years, but I don't fashion myself a security expert. Actually, Michael Nelson, who is in our church body, this is what he does for a living, right? He protects a corporation as a security analyst, and so he's a lot more aware of some of the more sophisticated things about security. So I had him look at this presentation. I even had my son Johnny look at this presentation, got some good feedback, okay? So these are just kind of some of my best-known methods of how to approach security. It's not necessarily the only way, but I think it's a kind of a helpful collection of research that I've done that should save you some time. But I will say that this is something where it's going to take time to absorb this, and it's going to take time to implement this. Some of this you could do on your own. Some of it you're going to need some help. But keep that in mind. I'm really trying to focus on the 80-20 rule. So there are so many things you could do, but I'm trying to focus on the 20% of things you can do that have the most impact. So that's kind of my goal. So I recently went to a conference all about security in the healthcare industry. And to be honest, it was pretty daunting. In the last 2 years, 91% of healthcare organizations have reported a data breach. So they've lost data to the bad guys, 91%. Now, in some cases, those were small data breaches. In some cases, those were big data breaches. So overall, this is probably a conservative estimate, they think one-third of our medical records have been stolen. Okay? So it's kind of a new reality for all of us to realize. So you can go on something called the dark web, and for about $1, you could buy a stolen credit card. For anywhere from $10 to $600, you could buy medical records. So you can see why the bad guys really want to go after the medical records, right? So this is kind of the backdrop of where we find ourselves. Let's see. So what are the bad guys doing with this information, right? One of the things they're doing is IRS fraud. You probably heard this in the news, right? They're basically, when they have enough of someone's personal information, they basically get their refund. They beat people to their refund. Been a major problem this year, right? So this is why you should do your taxes as soon as possible. They're due this Monday, by the way, right? The other thing they're using this information for is for claims fraud, right? They're just fraudulent claims to the government. Another thing that they use this stolen information is through targeted phishing attacks, and we'll talk about phishing attacks in a second. But basically, they have information about you, so they can be very convincing when they're trying to talk to you. And obviously, we're just trying to protect you, your financial information, right? Any financial information you have, that's really the goal, trying to protect that. Johnny, can you go to... Okay. Oh, so, yeah, this is what we're going to cover today. First, let's talk about phishing attacks. So what is phishing attacks? You can see that spelling is a little different. We go to the next slide. Phishing attacks. So phishing attacks are basically when the bad guys are trying to get information from you. And the thing is, they're getting better at it, right? And partly the reason they're getting better at it is sometimes they already have some information about you, right? So this is why it's putting out the call to be, you know, treat everything, every message that comes into your system, treat it as a potential threat, right? This could be an email. This could be a phone call. This could be someone showing up at the door, right? And remember that their whole goal is to be convincing, right? You talk about the enemy, Satan, being an angel of light, right? He can appear attractive, right? So a phishing attack can appear attractive, right? So this is the call to everybody. And by the way, when they asked hospitals what was the biggest cause of these 91% data breaches, the biggest cause was phishing attacks and lost and stolen devices. That was the bulk of the problem, right? So phishing attacks are basically bad guys trying to get information. So let me just give you some examples. You know, you might get an email that looks very official from your bank or from Amazon or from someone you're used to dealing with. It might look very official. And there'll be a link in there, and you click on the link, and boom, maybe they got you there. Or you click on a link, and it takes you to a website, and the website looks very convincing. It looks exactly like you're logging into your bank. But you type in your credentials, and it wasn't the bank's website at all, and you just gave your credentials away, right? So that's why whenever you get anything in your email inbox, I always just treat it with suspicion, and I go directly to the bank, right? So go directly to the bank's website, call the bank's phone number. Even if you get a call from someone saying they're from your bank, they may even know your Social Security number. They may have lots of information about you. You say, I'm sorry. You can be very polite with them, but you say, I need to confirm this directly. So this is the word about phishing attacks is to be on guard. Yeah. And another thing to keep in mind is that sometimes these can come from families and friends. If you have a family or a friend who has been infected, right? One of the things that the bad guys do is they go through their contact list and they send out messages to everyone on their contact list. You might have had this happen in the past, but so be aware that sometimes someone has an account that's broken into. What I always like to do, maybe this is on the next. Well, yeah, I can say this now. Well, the only time I really click on attachments, download a file from an email, or click on a link in an email is when it's timely. So, like, I know I was just talking to them on the phone, and they said I'm going to send that over. Right? Then there's a time window where I'm pretty sure that that's legitimate. But otherwise, it's just a good idea not to click on links or download things. Can we go to the next slide? So, for email and browsing, I am a big fan of using Gmail. It's free, and it has good crowdsource filtering. So because there's so many people who use Gmail, the nice thing about it is there's lots of people who, when they see something suspicious, they click on it, and they mark it as spam, and then everyone benefits from that. So Google's watching all this traffic, and they can see these patterns that we can't see. So Google's a good way to, first of all, get all the junk out of your inbox, because they do a pretty good job of getting that out, and even the bad stuff. Sometimes spam is just someone trying to sell you something. Sometimes spam is a bad guy trying to get your information. So basically, you know, the general rule is never send anything over email that's sensitive information, financial information, Social Security number, bank account numbers. Never send, especially like if you're refinancing a mortgage and your mortgage company wants to have you upload some documents to them, don't do it over email. If you're going to do it over email, my son gave me this tip, which I wholeheartedly agree with, is you can use it, and I'll add this link to the presentation, by the way, and this presentation will be on our website. But there's a program called 7-Zip, and you can zip something up, and you can add a password. And now you have this file that's encrypted, and you attach that to your email and send it wherever, and then out of band, on a phone line or in a text, send them the password. So that's an acceptable way to send something securely over email. So just make sure it's encrypted.
Is that different
than if you're on somebody's website and you have to put in information like
that's a good
point. If you're on a trusted website, and up in the left-hand corner it says HTTPS, usually has like a little lock. And you've gone to that site directly yourself, you've typed in the bank's website, you know, then that's a place where you can edit it. Johnny?
Another note, don't ever access secure stuff on, like, open network,
We'll talk about that a little bit later. Yeah, I mean, whenever you're in a public Wi-Fi, now this is a little more secure because we set a password here and you have to know the password, but you're in a coffee shop, everyone can connect. And I'll talk, I can actually talk about this now because when we're talking about browsing, I recommend using Chrome. In general, that's considered to be the more secure browser. So, and Chrome is free. And in general, some of the things you bump into are either extensions that you can add to Chrome. Those can be malware, or you can have little toolbars at the top. I've been to some people where they just have like three or four toolbars all at the top, and they just got added over time. A lot of times those can be, you know, they can slow your browser down and they can be stealing information. So it's better not to add anything to your browser. The one exception that I would add is there is an extension called HTTPS Everywhere. And HTTPS, what that is it's an encrypted connection. It's a secure connection between your browser and whoever you're talking to. So if you're talking to your bank. And so before, it used to just be when you were making a purchase or you're on your bank website. That was the only time HTTPS was using. But now what's happening is it's going everywhere. Now everyone's using it. So this extension basically, so whenever you type in a web address at the top, it automatically goes to the HTTPS automatically. So and that's a good thing to do. And so what was happening is you'd be in a coffee shop and you'd log into Facebook. And at the time, Facebook didn't use HTTPS. And so someone in the coffee shop can get some easily obtainable software and can watch everyone's traffic in the coffee shop. And they can see the password, and they could steal someone's Facebook account. So if you're... Oh, yes.
On Apple devices and stuff, Safari seems to be sort of the thing. Is it really important to use Chrome on, like an iPhone or an iPad?
My opinion is that Chrome is what you should use. But I think the important thing is whatever browser you use, just make sure keep it up to date. And I'll talk a little bit more about updates later. But Chrome kind of has that reputation of being, I think they're all pretty good. I think Chrome is just the best, right? So this is just my opinion that I feel more comfortable with Chrome. So, but it is a little different.
You just said avoid HTTPS everywhere.
I'm sorry. Yeah, avoid browser extensions. But that's an exception. I'll make that more clear. That's a good point. Yeah. So avoid browser extensions. So, if you're adding an extension to your browser that's from a trusted source like Google, those I tend to be okay with. But there's literally thousands of authors who publish. You don't know where they're from. You don't know who they are. And people find that, you're going to do a web search about something and boom, I have an extension that does this and boom, install. And then boom, you might be compromised at that point. So just in general, avoid browser extension. Here's the next screen. So backups. So this is probably one of the most powerful things I can talk about today, and it's to make sure that you have a backup. And the nice thing is it's getting easier, right? And what you really should have is you should have a local and a remote backup. So I'm just going to tell you what I do, and then we'll kind of elaborate on this. So for my local backup, I have something called Time Machine. And all that is I have an external hard drive, which you can go buy at Costco for, say, $100, and you put it on your Wi-Fi network, and then I run Time Machine, and it backs up my computer onto that secondary hard drive. So there's similar software you can get for a PC that will do that. You buy an extra hard drive, you put it on your network, and your computer is backed up locally. Backblaze is a company that actually provides a remote service, so they're in the cloud, right? And all the stuff on my hard drive gets encrypted and gets sent to their server. And it gets done continuously. So the first backup takes hours, and then after that it's just very fast. So I wouldn't let anyone work on your computer unless you have a backup. And I know some people, they don't have any backups, and they have photos, and they have really precious information on there, and it makes my heart sick that they don't have backups. And so the very, very, very cheapest thing you can do today, if you want, is go to Fred Meyer and go buy a USB flash drive for $15 or whatever, and take your data, your most precious data, and just you can't do everything, but just download your pictures or whatever it is that you really don't want to miss. Take that and go put it in the fire safe. Or go give it to a family friend in another house or something, if they're really precious kind of heirloom things. So that's something really simple you can do. But the very best kind of security is Backblaze. Now, the one thing about Backblaze is it costs money. It's $5 a month per computer. But the beauty of it is that it's remote, it's automatic, you set it and forget it. And you can at any time log into Backblaze, and they'll actually send you a whole new hard drive with all your data. And they also have the ability to go back in time. So one of the things that you need to be aware of is this thing called ransomware. And what ransomware is when you do, when you are breached somehow, they scramble your entire hard drive and they say, pay up and we'll decrypt it for you. And this is happening. And there's a hospital down in California. This is happening all over the place. But there's a hospital in California just like literally months ago that the whole hospital was encrypted with ransomware. And the bad guys ended up getting, I think, 15K or something, and they unencrypted it, right? So to protect yourself from that, and see, in some cases, the attack is sophisticated enough where they like, oh, look, I noticed that the person I'm attacking, they have this remote backup. I'm going to encrypt that too, right? So they go and encrypt your remote backup. The nice thing about Backblaze is you can go back a day, or, you know, so you go back to where the last known good state. And keeping incremental backups on your own is something you'll never do because it takes so much time, right? Doing continuous backups is something you just want to automate and set. So there is this thing called Crash Plan, and Crash Plan has a free version, and they'll do what Time Machine does. So if you have an extra hard drive attached to your network, Crash Plan will back up to it. Crash Plan, I think, also has this thing where they can actually back up to friends' computers, or, you know, if you just have someone else that you know that would has some extra hard drive space, you can back up to there. It has some pretty cool features. So Crash Plan has a free backup option, but Crash Plan also does the same thing that Backblaze does. They have a subscription cloud-based thing. And there's actually several, right? There's lots of companies that do this, and Backblaze is the one that I use, but there are others, and you can kind of compare the prices. But it does cost money, but it really is the nicest option.
Why not use iCloud as your backup?
Yeah, iCloud's another example. I mean, there's Dropbox, there's iCloud. A lot of places are now providing online storage, and so it's just a question of, is it backing up like all of your computer automatically? But you could put things. That's a good example where right now it's a more manual thing. So like I could manually back things up to Dropbox, or I could manually back up things to iCloud. So there are places to there's lots of free cloud storage, by the way. So Dropbox will give you what, a gig or something or more than that. They'll give you quite a lot of space, and it's free. And you install it, and there's a folder on your computer, and you just drag stuff to it, and it's backed up. So it's also pretty simple.
But does the cloud ever get where the fees get to do that?
So all of your data is basically protected by the password you pick for that data. So the nice thing is that Backblaze, they can't interpret or decrypt any of the data. I mean, all of it's just a black box to them. So the bad guy has to steal your password. And then wherever it is, they could decrypt it, right? So as long as you have a high security password, and we'll talk about passwords in a second. But, so a USB key at Fred Meyer or Backblaze, $5 a month?
They were telling us in a class that the flash that you're talking about, mm-hmm. to put it on, mm-hmm. that same with the DVD, they're only figure that the life of it is about 7 years, and after that it could disappear off either one of them.
Yep, that's a really good point. That's a great point. And that's why that's only buying you, 7 years. So, yeah, to back up things for long term, that's a really good point. Online is a better way to do that, because now that company, and the nice thing about Backblaze is the amount of capacity that I can upload is unlimited. They don't limit how much I can back up.
Did you say that you have to encrypt it before you send it to these places?
It does it for you. In the case of Backblaze, it does that for you. Yeah. Yeah, if you were gonna send it over email, you can manually encrypt a file. I'll put a link in here to 7-Zip, but I might also want to attach kind of a tutorial on how to use 7-Zip. But
it's the number 7-Zip.
Yeah, 7-zip.com, and I can add it to the. Yeah, it's pretty straightforward. To once you have it installed, I think you right click a file, you say zip, and then a dialog box comes up, and it's kind of busy, but there's a field where you can type in a password.
Are you supposed to do that? Like you're going to order online, and you have to put in your credit card number and your expiration date before you can pay.
Mm-hmm.
Are you supposed to put that credit card number?
So that's being encrypted for you with HTTPS in your browser. And most, I mean, it's getting really good in the sense if you go to any big name website, Amazon, U.S. Bank, any big, it'll automatically, the main front page, every page you're on that website will all be HTTPS. And so everything's being encrypted between you, your browser, and there. Yeah, that's a good point. Oh, whenever you're ordering, that's a good tip. Always have HTTPS. And, you know, the truth is that even bad guys can have HTTPS, so it really comes down to do you trust, you know, who you're dealing with, right? And the smaller, you know, the smaller the company, maybe the more due diligence you should do to try to figure out are they a legit company. But if it's a big company and you're HTTPS, you're fine. And here's the beautiful thing about our credit card culture is that credit card companies have built into their business model that every year they're going to take it in the shorts so many percentage points for fraud. So they it's in their mind that if you call up and say, this wasn't me, they're just going to give you your money back, right? And now if you do that all the time, they're going to put you on a blacklist and say, so-and-so keeps finding fraud. But, I mean, I've had this happen, you know, 6 or 7 times in my life, and I just call up and say, that wasn't me, and they take it off. So that's pretty nice. 30 days... So let's go to AV software. So let's talk about AV software. Hey, Johnny, next slide. So there's some free options, and then I make some recommendations here. But the bottom line is AV software is something you should have. And, you know, here are my recommendations. It's just a good – the truth is being vigilant is probably more powerful than your AV software is, but because the bad guys, you know, they know how to get through this stuff. But the truth is, this is still going to catch a lot of stuff you want to catch, right? So, I think it's good to have it. If you have Windows, Windows has something free that's built in called Windows Essential Security Essentials. On the Macintosh, I currently use this program called, Avira. These are both free. But if you're going to pay for something, the link at the very bottom is the most... This is an independent organization that rates antivirus companies. And they just publish their recommendations of who they think is the best at this and the best at that. So if you want to look in more detail, go to the bottom link. But the one that currently won the award for providing the best protection was Norton. So that's if you wanted to pay, you know, your $30 a year or whatever... for protection. It's usually just some kind of subscription. I think really having some kind of reputable AV is better than nothing. So if you don't have Norton, I don't think that's terrible. I just think that having some AV that's up to date is just it's one thing you can do to protect yourself.
Do you recommend layering Norton on top of Windows?
Those programs work with each other, so you don't want both of them. But they're pretty smart today about, you know, it'll detect that there's one and it'll disable it. So when you install Norton, it'll disable the Windows protection. So, because it's redundant. So let's talk about passwords. Okay, this is another key part of the talk, and that's basically, I'm sure you've heard this, but you don't want to use simple passwords. Simple passwords are things like words that are in the dictionary, right? The bad guys basically brute force sometimes, and they just pick all the words in the dictionary, right? So that's why you never want to pick something that's in the dictionary, or even compound words, right? They try to crack that kind of stuff. And then common passwords, if you go to this link here, most popular passwords, it'll give you a whole list of passwords. And I will admit that one of those passwords, at one time I used. Okay, so if you go to that list of most common passwords, that's another thing the bad guys try. They just try to log in everywhere they possibly can with that list of the most common passwords. And there are things like 123 and password and, you know, really obvious things. Mine was let me in. Let me in was my password for certain things years ago. So this just helps you to know what to avoid. But the second link on here is a great article about how to pick a high security password. And I just give two examples down below. So you really want to, for every one of your websites, for every one of your passwords, you really want to have a high security password. And now I'm going to give you that should be a scary thing, because if you look at that password, you know, like look at the bottom one, that's the one I created. So, you know, JLMTIK4TBTSM @, you know, I mean, how can you possibly remember that? Well, you can, because you know what it's just a song, right? So this is a trick for creating really high quality passwords. But what I'm telling you is you should have a high security password like this for everything. And that should make you nervous, because no one does that, right? Because it takes so much time. What people normally do is they have a password. It may be okay, maybe good, and they just use it everywhere, right? That's what typically happens. So I'm gonna tell you something that will save the day. Next slide. So what will save the day is something called a password manager, or sometimes we all call it a password database. And what it is it's a safe box where you put all your passwords electronically. You put all your passwords in this program, and it's an encrypted box. And so basically now you only have one password. So I have one password that opens up this password manager, and then inside my password manager, and if I showed you guys today, I literally have hundreds of passwords just that I've collected over the years for different websites. But even if you just have 12 passwords or you have 20 passwords, you put them all in the password manager. And the nice thing about the password manager is, like, of the hundreds of accounts that I have, I don't know any of the passwords. I don't know any of them. I could go look at them, and for each account, it's just this long bit of gibberish. And the password was picked by my password manager, so it'll automatically generate a password for each account. And then whenever I need to log in to one of these websites, I open up my password manager, and I go select the thing I want to log into. There's a way to copy and paste it. You put it in your clipboard. And then I go to the website, and I paste it in, and that's how I log in. Now, that can be kind of cumbersome, and I use a program called KeePass to do that. But there's a really cool free program called LastPass, and it integrates with your browser. And by the way, I don't recommend browsers today want to remember your passwords. They ask you. For sensitive things, I don't like that. I'd like to have it. I like to have it in my password. I like to have everything in my password database. You know, account numbers, social security numbers, passwords. It's all in that safety box. But LastPass is nice because it does integrate with your browser. So that way, if you're logged into, say, your bank account, it'll automatically populate the password for your bank account, for example, or eBay or anywhere. LastPass will automatically fill in the password for you as long as you're logged into LastPass. So basically, if at some point in security, you're always planning for like a worst case scenario that there's a breach somewhere. And when there is a breach, you want to mitigate damage. Because if they get that one password, the first thing they're going to do is go try all these common places to log in. And they're going to try to use that password. So that's why it just slows them way down, because they're not going to. That's why you want to have a password for every account separate. And the only way that I can manage that complexity is if I had a program like LastPass or KeePass. So
what you're saying is that you put all your different passwords into that LastPass, mm-hmm. and you open that for an account in your bank. Mm-hmm. It knows which one to put over there.
Right.
That's why you open it.
Right. Once you've logged into LastPass, and you may have, I think there's rules about, like, it can time out, or it can, you know, you might have to re-log into LastPass. What I like to do is I log into my password manager, I use it, and then I close it. I don't like to keep it open, right? But LastPass is the same way. I think you can keep it open as long as you're logged into your computer, or you can have it. You can log in for higher security. You could log in more often, but it logs in for a session. So you'll log in, and then as long as you're logged into LastPass, now anywhere you go on the web browser to any website that has a password, LastPass can fill it out for you because it has the password remembered. So it's a big help. So that's password management is the solution until there's a better solution. So the next subject is two-factor authentication. So this is all about having something you know and something you have. So when I go to my bank, I know my password, but with two-factor authentication, I also have something. And that thing that you have tends to be your smartphone, tends to be your phone. You can also get other types of, you can actually just get a list of codes that you stick in your wallet. But two-factor authentication, these are two websites you can go to learn more about it. But a lot of places are supporting this now. You might have already bumped into it, them asking you to do two-factor authentication. But this way, when I log into Amazon, for example, I think Amazon recently added it, I log in, and if I haven't logged in for like a few months or something, it asks me to type in a code. And that code is sent to my phone. So that's the second step. The first step is I typed in my password. The second step is they sent a code to my phone, and I typed in that code. So this is another layer of security that they're adding. So what I wouldn't worry about trying to do this everywhere, but, you know, for your bank or for, you know, just places where you spend a lot of time that are money related, it's a good thing to do. So I want to talk about this one other concept, and that's that probably one of your most important passwords is, in this scenario, is your password to your password manager. That's the number one most important password. That better be a high security password, because if someone cracks that, they can get into everything, right?
Can you put it on a little thumb drive, and when you're working your computer, that's the only time it's there, otherwise it's never exposed?
They have that option as well. That there's a way to put what they call a key on your thumb drive, and you plug it in, and then when I launch LastPass or KeePass, it looks for that USB drive, and it won't open unless you have that USB drive. So it's like, that's another layer, right? You can type in a password.
Because that makes more sense to me. Yeah. Nobody
has access. That's true. If they don't have that, that's right. And one thing I do encourage you to do is if you do put all your passwords in a password database, is to make sure you have a backup of that database, right? So if your computer dies, well, there's all my passwords, right? So you have to have a backup of that. And so I often copy it onto a flash drive.
Is it LastPass in the cloud?
Yeah. I think it's there's things cached locally, but yeah, it works in the cloud. So it works across computers.
And it's free.
There's a premium version, and I'm not sure what features they add, but there's a free version. LastPass, yeah. And that's it. Yeah, LastPass works in the cloud. That's a good point. Because like today with KeePass, I actually have my database on my home laptop. I put it on a USB drive. I plug that USB drive into my work computer, and that's how I have all my passwords available at work. So I choose not to have it copied over the cloud, right? But I could. I could also put it in Dropbox. I could put it on iCloud, right? You can have your password database sitting up there. But back to the question of, you know, that's really a sweet honeypot. So if someone broke into that, it's like, wow, they would have the golden keys to your kingdom. So I think a wise thing to do is the passwords that you should really commit to memory or have them written down and put in a safe somewhere are the password to your password manager, the password to your email account. That's really critical because a lot of times people use your email account as a way of reestablishing your identity, right? So if you forgot your password, right? If someone has control of your email account, that's bad. So that's another one where you want that to be a high security password. And what some people have done is, first of all, I just recommend, you know, using strong passwords, using separate passwords per account, putting it in a password database. If you did that, that's such a huge step forward. But if you want to go the next mile, the next mile is to start committing to memory just a handful of passwords that are really sensitive. So then you're thinking about the very, very worst case scenario. What if someone gets a hold of my password database? You know, so it's my bank, my email. You just pick a small subset. And you can write those passwords down, but then store them in a very, very secure place, right, in your house. That's how you would take it to the next mile. Johnny, next page. So This is about your home network. So a lot of people today have wireless routers. So this article goes into more detail on how to make sure your router is in primo shape. Now, this is a little more technical. So this is maybe something where you need to get a friend or some help to make sure your router is set up properly. But this is where you can point them, right, when you get that help. Or if you want to dive into, you know, you could try to look at it, first try it yourself. If you feel like this is too complicated, you know, get a friend or someone who can help make sure your wireless router is configured the best way. And a lot of it's just, some of it's just making sure it has a good password. That's one example. At home, for filtering all the dark alleys on the internet, there's two filtering programs that I use at home. One is called OpenDNS, and the cool thing about that is it works at the router level. So everything connecting to my home network, whether it's my iPhone or my laptop, they all go through the router, and then from the router, I can do filtering. And that's free. And it's a little more technical on how to set it up, but I think they do have some pretty good directions up there. But again, you might need some help configuring your router to use OpenDNS. But it's a great way to protect everything that connects to your router. And if you're going to, at our house, I like to have two levels of, it's kind of redundant, but I like to have two levels of security. So especially for the kids, I have a program called K9. It's also free. You can install it on your computer. And not only is it just filtering out all the junk on the internet, it's also filtering out, you know, malware, viruses, you know, just because a lot of times there'll be a website that looks, you know, legitimate and, you know, it's a bad site that these programs can filter out.
So, what is this
So it's free, and it runs locally. So you would need to install it per computer. So every computer that you wanted to be filtered. And then, you know, for my kids, I set a password so that if they're ever doing some research for homework or something on there, they're first going to bump into K9, and then they're going to bump into OpenDNS. So next slide for social media. So in social media, remember that when you ask yourself, what's the product? You know, I'm getting this service for free. Who's paying for this service? Doug knows this well. On social media, on Facebook, you are the product. They're selling access to you. And the creators of social media programs like Facebook, they want it to be as open as possible because they want as many people to connect and as many people to join as possible. And so over the years, they change what's called their privacy policy to be more open. And so they may have made a change, and they might have made your information more open than you want it. So I encourage you to go to the Facebook settings under privacy and just make sure the settings you're comfortable with them. And this is just a really ripe area for people who are doing social engineering or phishing attacks, because they can learn stuff about you. Like they can say, oh, that's interesting. They left on vacation. Their house is probably, you know, free to rob, you know. Or they just learn about you so that when they do a phishing attack, they might have been following you on Facebook, right? So Facebook can be really open, or you can tighten it down where only your friends can see. But then just remember, your friends connect to other people that connect to other people. So it's still a place to be careful what you share. And these are two places you can go to look at how to set permissions. So updates. This next one. So my son back here, he scrawled in ink here, do not ignore the updates. Really, don't. Leave the computer on overnight, and it should auto-update at night without bothering you. So that is the other key is, you know, one of the reasons we're having all these problems is because we're so connected, right? Everything's connected. So the thing that's causing the problem is also the solution, and that's that now that we're connected all the time, or it's easier to connect, now we can receive constant updates. It used to be before that you had to be wary of updates, like, oh, is it going to crash my computer? But really now, we live in a world where you just have to make sure you're up to date on your updates. You know, you make sure your car's up to date on your oil change. You make sure your computer's up to date on any kind of patches. So this could be your browser's updates, your operating system updates, any program you use a lot. If it's Microsoft Word, just make sure all those programs are updating if they're asking you. Now, a lot of programs are nice, like Chrome. It automatically updates. that's kind of updating silent in the background. So that's another way to keep your system secure. Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I mean, the truth is that most of the time, I think you know, for a given platform, I think you want to know, okay, what does an update really look like? And I think, you know, those companies put a lot of effort into trying to make sure that no one can mimic that same path. So in general, I think it's better to get that update on there, because if you don't, then someone could do what you're talking about, right? It is very possible that someone could send you something that looks like an update. And it's why it's even more important to make sure that we receive the official updates as soon as you can. Yeah. Okay, next one, getting help. So what I like to talk about here is I think it's something we don't often... I know that I don't sometimes, like if I bought a boat, you know, it's not just the cost of the boat, it's the cost of maybe storing the boat and cleaning the boat, and you know, over time things break. And I just think sometimes we don't fully think about the real cost of ownership. And so I think it's, unfortunately, that's the way that computers are today. It's not just what you paid for it when you bought it at the store. There's this ongoing cost to use it. And so whether that's AV software or backup software or when you really just say, I have no idea how to do this. I need to get this configured right. I need some help on some of this stuff. And so if you have an Apple product, I am a big, big fan of when you buy the product, you can add on Apple Care. And it usually costs a couple $100. But get Apple Care. And then what you can do is you can make an appointment with Apple anytime. And you can go and ask them about anything. Did you get a virus? Take it to Apple Care. Do you want to know how a program works? And you're like, I'm making a photo album, and I want to learn how to use this cool photo album program. Make an appointment with Apple Care. If you want to, I mean, literally anything you want to do with your Apple device, whether it's a problem or you're just learning, you take it to Apple Care. And I think you have, at least I recall, you know, it's kind of, in a sense, it's kind of unlimited, and for that 2 years, right? So it's just really good support. And Apple products are more expensive, but they're well supported, in my opinion. If you're going to have a PC product, I can't vouch for Geek Squad. I've never used Geek Squad, but they're kind of the equivalent, right? If you're really in a bind and you need to hire a professional, Geek Squad is worth looking at. But really, what we all do is we all have someone we know, right? It's a family member, it's a friend, it's the kid down the street, whoever it is. But the message for them is just realize that, you know, you have an accountant, you might have a lawyer, you might have a tax guy. Treat that technical person the same way, right? But the cool thing is that I know that when we live in communities, we have the lawyer who gives us free advice, right? He wants to, right? Here, I know that over the years, I've helped people and Johnny's helped people. We do it because we're a part of this church family, and it's part of our tithe. It's part of our joy to share and to give. So there's definitely places for us as a community to support each other. And this is one of those ways where if people need some help and this just completely overwhelms you, get some help, right? Totally. Don't be fearful. Come get some help, right? But bake them cookies or something, you know? Or if they're a poor college student, you know, give them a little donation or something for their college fund or something. But you guys have all been great in this capacity. But it's good to cultivate a relationship with your nearby geek. Yeah, Dutch Bros. Exactly, Dutch Bros. Okay, last slide. So here's just the takeaways. This is the really focus on the 20% of things you can do to really get the biggest impact, what I'm saying today. And that's number one, just you need to be more vigilant, right? We all need to be more vigilant. Emails, phone calls, whatever. Number two, I really encourage people to look into set it and forget it backups. Right? This is the one thing that costs money on here that I think is really, it's peace of mind, right? But there are free options, and especially if you're diligent and you want the free option, go buy the $15 USB key and just every week back up the things that really matter to you, and realize they don't last forever. So you need to keep buying the new USB key every year. Buy a new USB key, right? And back up the stuff that's really important. Okay, have strong passwords and use password management. You guys heard my whole talk about that. And then finally, just keep everything up to date. So if you do these things, you've done a lot. I mean, this does a lot of the heavy lifting if you focus on these four things. So I can stay as long as you guys want. I can try to answer any questions, and I'll put this online. So you don't have to memorize all these links. So all these links will be available on the website. On the church's website. Yeah. I can do that too. Skip can send out a link. It'll just link to a page on the church's website, and then you can download the file from that page. But Skip could also have an attachment, and given that you know that he was sending it, you'd maybe know to, you probably trust that. But it'll probably be, if I have you send an email, it'll probably just be a link to a page, and then when you come to the page, it'll have an MP3 of this audio, and it'll have this PDF. Okay. Yeah, and you could print out the PDF.
And not 50 pages.
It's 16 pages, I think. I think I kept it down to 15. Yeah.
So, Jason, you're a father, you're a working man, you're a husband. How much? It seems like you've given us a lot of license to come to you to ask us questions about this. So, mm-hmm. Given your full schedule, mm-hmm. What would be probably appropriate?
So I through life experience, I've learned to be better about saying no when I can't, because obviously it's a very intense, busy time of life for me. So I'm getting better at saying no. But one of the things in the church that I would like to do is gather together a handful of people who are kind of tech-minded, and then have kind of share some of the load, right? Because I really do want to, there's people in the church family that I really want them to, if there's something they're really worried about, I mean, I want to serve them in that way and try to find out a way to, to address whatever situation they're having. But I'll need help. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think exactly. It's the Dayspring Geek Squad. So I appreciate that.
If I have a super problem, is your son available to hire?
Yes, and the cool thing is I've gotten older, and I've been more specialized. At Intel, if I have a problem, my Geek Squad is the Intel IT department. Right? They don't want me spending time trying to get malware out of my system. They want me to send it there. So I've become less useful in that way. Like, there's things I can do. But my son, who is a little more at this part of his life where he's a little more intensely interested in this, he's learning about it, he knows things I don't know. And so, yeah, Karen Garish, she called us. I was at Home Depot, and she said, these people are on the line with me telling me that I should install this. And, they were already they'd already installed something on her system, and I just said, disconnect your computer, hang up the phone. and she brought the computer to Johnny, and Johnny found out where they installed it. He removed it, right? And he saw what they were doing, right? And we caught it just in time, right? So they were trying to install a back door where they could hop in at any time and mess around, right?
And did they see her out, or did she see them?
Somehow they just got a hold of phone numbers. They were probably just cold calling people. And they were taking advantage of the fact that Windows XP had recently, Microsoft no longer supports Windows XP. So there's no longer patches being released for XP. So there's known attack, there's known vulnerabilities with XP. And they were exploiting that fact.
I got a question. It's probably a dumb question. If my computer is sitting back under the chair, they're turned off. Nobody can get into it when it's turned off, can they?
For the most part, that is true. Yeah, I mean, I would just say for the most part that's true. I mean, there is some technology called wake on LAN where a computer can receive a packet and wake up. So if you had battery power and if that were configured that way, I mean, I'm kind of telling you some of the...
But if it's off.
Yeah, if it... Yeah. Yeah, and a consumer device, that's rare for that to be configured. Johnny was saying on a server, that's a more typical thing because you're managing all these... servers, and it might be the whole system might be powered down, but the Ethernet is still awake, and it receives one packet, and the whole thing wakes up. But yeah, it's possible, but it's not very likely. I mean, if a bad guy got in your system, that might be one of the things he turned on, right, so that he could try to wake it up anytime. And that's why we're just trying to stop.
So if you have your Wi-Fi on all the time, which probably most people do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you see it on your computer? Something downloading here?
Yeah, it's on my computer when I open it up.
Mm.
And the thing's been off.
The browser, yeah, I'm not sure what's going on there. But I would have to investigate. Yeah, it has to ask Johnny.
So I like that the church has resources that we can call, right? But I have a lawyer. If I have legal advice, I go to a lawyer. If I need financial advice, I go to a financial account. If I have a real estate question, I have a professional I go to, right? I just think that makes sense. If you've got serious computer issues, not just, hey, Jason, how do I open Outlook, right? But, I mean, if you need your computer worked on, I would get a computer person
mm-hmm.
and make him a part of your team. That's what you talked about.
Yep.
Just give you a tip. This little guy down here next to the yellow building has the sign out. Computer 101 Easy or whatever it is. I went to that guy. He was terrific. He was fast and he was economical. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I would expect you would have the same kind of experience because I had to give him my old computer and have everything taken off of the old one and all that put on the new one. Right? Because we couldn't fix the old one. My screen, your computer screen is a device and the wire broke inside, so my computer worked fine, but you couldn't see anything. Right? And the cost of repairing the screen was going to be at or more than what the whole computer was. So I got a whole new computer. Well, now how do you get all that stuff from this one to that
mm-hmm.
one? That isn't something Jason's going to do after church in 10 minutes. Right? I mean, it took many, many hours. But this guy had it set up. He automated the whole thing, and it was just terrific.
Yeah,
so,
just like you find a mechanic you really like and you trust. It's a mechanic for your computer. That's true. Oh, really? A computer person?
Mechanic.
Oh, mechanic.
And if you go to this guy, tell him that Pastor Skip sent you because I would really like to get him to come to church.
But it responded to something, and they found out that there's a virus that somebody can put in your screen to make the screen go black. It's called black screen virus or something. And so they just took, there was a hard drive machine, it wasn't a laptop. They got rid of that screen, put another one in, and the whole thing worked.
Yeah.
What? Who wants to sit around and do stuff like that to people? It's nuts.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, everybody.